I show that video because I'm a school teacher by day. And so I work with teenagers all the time, and there is a big shift that's happening in our culture in terms of the propagation of different worldviews in our nation. You may not believe so, but maybe you are a bit dismayed, but just some simple statistics will help. Did you know that in 1945, on the Australian census, 87% of Australians identified as Christian? We'll round it up to 90%. 9 in 10 people, if you ask them down at Settlement City in 1945, what's your worldview, they would say, I'm a Christian. Today, it's about 60%. It's a 30% drop would claim to have a worldview of Christianity. That even seems a little overstated, doesn't it? I wonder if you get 6 out of 10 today if you ask the question. But even more so, if you crunch the numbers, in 1945, the largest Protestant denomination, Anglicanism in Australia, was 40% of all Australians, closest to our own handling of the Bible here at the point. 40% were Anglican in 1945. Today, it's about 18.7% are Anglican in our culture today. In 1945, the number of people that would have responded to the survey as having no religion was statistically insignificant, less than 0.1%. Today, 18.7% of Australians claim to have no religion, and a large proportion of those would say they are atheist. Isn't that striking? Today, the exact number of people who say they're Anglican is equal to the same number of people in our country that say they have no religious worldview. Worse than that, 18% of Australians equals about 4 million people today. You want to know how many of those 4 million Anglican Australians will go to church today? About 185,000, less than 5%. We are disconnecting from community. We're finding a creep in only a couple of generations where the throwing off of belief in God is becoming common in our culture. Now, there are many different worldviews that people are taking on in our culture, but one of them is certainly atheism. And so I thought we could spend some time this morning having a look at one of these kinds of attacks on Christian worldview. And I show that video deliberately because as a school teacher, I have the intersection of two great disciplines at my school. I get to teach senior chemistry and science, and I oversee chaplaincy. And where those two roles overlap is a fantastic place to live. So I get to see these discussions. And this video came across my news feed from students at my school who said, this is exactly what I believe. This now explains why I'm an atheist, and that is now my worldview, from a 4-minute cartoon clip. We have to take it seriously. You see, if you're not in church this morning, where are you? You're probably on your social media, and on your social media, you're probably getting all kinds of influences coming in, something like that video. So we need to critique it, and one of the reasons that we ought to critique it is if we go to Hosea, where our series has been, what is Israel constantly condemned for by God? Hosea 11, which was set aside to be one of our texts that we would have looked at this morning, reminds us of exactly that question. God says, when Israel was a child, I loved him, and out of Egypt I called my son. The more they were called, the more they went away. They kept sacrificing to the Baals and burning offerings to idols. God says, I called my people to worship me, but as they grew up, they grew away. And what did they do? They inherited the cultural practices of their day and owned it for themselves. That's the message of Hosea, isn't it? We don't have Baals and idols in the same way that they did. We have different cultural norms, don't we? One of which is atheism. And so I'd like to spend some time this morning having a look at this kind of push that is becoming really commonplace for our next generation and the culture outside of these doors. The new atheist movement is gaining some traction, and so I think we need to respond. So if you've got your sermon outline, it's there in the new sheet. It will give you a bit of a structure for where we're going. Two things. If you're an atheist this morning, I want to affirm you. I love that you have a worldview. You're not the enemy. There's nothing worse than the person, I get this all the time in my teaching as well, where you ask the teenager, what do you think about the big questions of life? Why am I here? Where am I going? What's the meaning of life? And they go, oh, let's go and do some gaming. But the teenager that says, sir, I'm an atheist and these are the reasons why, I respect that. So if you're an atheist this morning, I commend you for having a worldview and thinking it through. And secondly, I'm not going to claim that the atheist friend on the video is the typical picture of all atheist views. It's just one of the contentions they might bring against Christians. So I'm not trying to group you as if all atheists have exactly the same belief system. But having said that, what I would like to do is critique this video. And the reason that I chose this one is because, to be honest, it's quite unsettling. Did you feel unsettled by some of the claims that were made? When it was first sent to me by a student, I said, you know what? That's a really good video because it's making me think. Some of those claims are really powerful. Do you feel a bit rattled this morning? We've got to get to the bottom of this. Are we fools for believing in God in the current age? So let's have a look at some of the claims that were made on the video and see where the truth is. This was the first claim that came from the mouth of the atheist. He said, "Your relationship with God seems to be precisely shaped by the culture within which you were raised and the predominant version of God you were taught to believe in. Religion obeys borders. You believe in your version of God simply because you were taught that version of God by your parents and by your culture," says the atheist. "The only reason we worship Jesus, apparently, is because your parents taught you about Jesus and your culture affirms Jesus." Now, I want to critique at one level, it comes later in the outline, but I want to do it here. In red, religion obeys borders. When talking with atheists, you must, if you're a Christian, talk about Christianity, not religion. Christianity, by definition, is not a religion. Christianity is a relationship with God through the person of history, Jesus Christ. And that through him and his teachings, we believe God has revealed himself to all of mankind, and through his work, we have relationship with God. It's not about what I do, it's what he has done. If you fall for the trap of talking about religion, somehow you find yourself in an awful corner where you're somehow defending the awful things that were done in the name of religion in Paris two nights ago. You are a Christian, and you believe in Jesus Christ as Lord and Savior. Don't fall into the trap of trying to defend religion. By and large, religion is disgusting. Jesus was killed by the religious people for not being religious enough. So as we respond to this, the question ought to be, does Christianity obey borders? Well, let's get some statistics. Sorry, I love science and math, so we'll do some stats. On the screen are some stats that came out of a global study in 2013. The source you might be able to see on bottom right, it's at globalchristianity.org if you want to have a look. And it crunched numbers and it said, well, let's have a look and see where is Christianity growing the fastest in the world today. And you can see in the purple column that if you're looking for the country where Christianity is growing the fastest, you've got to go to Nepal, then China, then United Arab, Saudi Arabia, and Qatar. And if you ask the question, well, what's the predominant culture of these countries? On the far right of screen, you'll see that the majority religion and culture are listed as these. In other words, if you want to find where Christianity is growing the fastest, don't go to a Christian country. You have to go to a country where it is almost certain that the person that just became a Christian was raised by non-Christian parents in a non-Christian culture. That's where Christianity is booming. Don't go to Christian nations to try and find Christian converts that have just swallowed the gullibility pill and you're just what your parents made you. It's absolute rubbish. Christianity is not doing that today. In fact, we just talked about the fact that it's in decline in our nation, statistically. Some more stats that come out of this study are fascinating. 11 countries on the top 20 of fastest growing Christian communities are found in Muslim countries against a backdrop of intense persecution. Not a single country from Europe, Northern America, or Latin America makes the top 20 list in terms of Christian growth rates, which again confirms the point. What are these countries traditionally? They have been changed by Christendom when Christianity boomed. But you go to these countries today, Christianity is not growing fast there in a backdrop of parental hand down and cultural favor. It's not. If you want to, the final point, look for the highest Christian growth rates. You have to go to non-Christian religious groups. Hindu, non-religious, Buddhists, Muslims, and ethno-religionists. The first point simply doesn't stand. Christianity does not obey borders. And let me remind you, it never has. The Christmas story is coming up. We love the Christmas story. That hasn't shown, so I'll just read it. We come up to Christmas time and we can read in Luke chapter 2 the story of Mary and Joseph traveling to Bethlehem. Why did they go? Well, at that time, the Roman Emperor Caesar Augustus issued a decree that everyone needed to return to their hometown because a census was to be taken. This is when Quirinius was governor of Syria, and off goes the story, they return home. Why did they have to return home? Because the Roman government said, go and get counted. What was the Roman culture of the time? It was the pantheon of gods. It was worship of the emperor as divine. And into that culture came the birth of a son called Jesus. And from that moment, history exploded as people started to believe in Jesus as the God-man. What was the culture of the time? Roman pantheism. It didn't happen because, oh, well, everyone's a Christian, so let's all be a Christian. Rubbish. And for three centuries, Christians were persecuted till finally in the fourth century, the Roman Caesar himself converted to Christianity and established it as a state religion, and there was stability for a time. Christianity does not obey borders today. It didn't obey borders when it was first born, and it's a great conundrum for historians. The question is asked, how on earth did this small cult in Palestine possibly gain traction 2,000 years ago under such intense persecution? There's something in the message of Christianity that turns people from their culture and from their parents to Jesus, even if it costs them their life. That's how Christianity spreads. Christianity does not obey borders. Even stepping back from the statistics, have you seen the subtle insult in that comment? It's not so subtle. Dr. John Lennox, whom I commend to you as a great apologist to the Christian faith against atheism, has this great saying. He says, what's good for the goose is good for the gander. In other words, if you say something of me and it's a universal truth, then it's true of you as well. See, there, if we're critiqued for being Christians just because mummy and daddy told us to be and because our culture says it's good to be, really, you're just a gullible simpleton. You haven't switched your brain on, have you? You're just a sucker. You've just accepted what mum and dad said. You haven't thought this through. Wake up, says the atheist. Progress. Evolve. Well, then, if that's true of the Christian, what if it's true of the atheist? You're only an atheist because you were raised in a home that didn't follow God and your secular culture says atheism is good. You say that to the atheist, they're like, no, I'm thinking about these things. For these 17 reasons, I'm convinced there is no God. And you say, it's exactly the same for me. I'm thinking these things through. I would contend that all of you this morning who are Christians spend a lot of time pondering what you believe about God. Of course we do. You say to teenagers, you're only a Christian because mum and dad said so. They're like, what? Mum and dad said something. I'll do something else. It doesn't stand. That's not why we're Christians. You're a thinker. Don't fall for that. Oh, yeah, maybe they're true. Maybe I just believe. No. What's good for the goose is good for the gander. And so the atheist moves on in our story. It's not true. Christianity does not obey borders, and Christianity is for thinkers. It's always been that way. But he goes on and contends again, doesn't he? He says, if God is speaking to all of you, then he appears to be telling you very different and contradictory things. I wish to affirm this in the atheist. You're dead right. If you want to look at religion as a whole, it's impossible. We can't bag all God worldviews into a simple bag and call it religion because we're all opposed. Of course we're saying different and contradictory things. But what he's really saying in the video is, see how there were lots of Christians in the cartoon? Different brands of Christianity. And he picks up very, very simply different emphases by different denominations within Christianity. He pays out the Pentecostals. He has a go at the Baptists for burning hell, and he says that Universalists and Mormons and Scientologists are all sort of Christian. I mean, come on. But what he's picking up on is this. He's saying there seems to be disagreement even within Christianity. And to me, I find that highly unconvincing. Well, that may be true. But my question here is, well, if there's squabbling amongst humanity, does that mean the thing that they're squabbling about isn't true, or does it perhaps mean that humanity may well have gotten it wrong? You see, one of the readings that we read this morning comes from Hebrews 1. And what Hebrews 1 does is it reminds us about the age we live in as Christians. You see, it says, in the past, God spoke to our ancestors through the prophets. We're looking at one of those communications from God through Hosea, aren't we, at the moment? That there was a time where God said, I will bring revelation to my people Israel through a mouthpiece of God the prophet. But in these last days, he has spoken to us by his Son, whom he appointed heir of all things, and also through whom he made the universe. You see, if we get dragged into discussions about what God has revealed to me and what God is telling me, we miss a punch with the atheist. What did Paul do when he was met with criticism? He often said, "When I was with you, I resolved to know nothing except Christ and Him crucified." You see, when we're dealing with people who do not believe in Jesus, we're tempted to talk about, "Well, let me tell you about what God's done in my life. I used to be this, but now I'm this. I'm a John 3 born again. I've been changed." And these are great things and powerful for us to discuss in Christian community, isn't it? We love to hear these stories, how the Lord is sanctifying and changing us. But for the atheist, it just falls on deaf ears. "I don't care. So you found some self-help at church. That's great. I'm all for that. That's for you. It's not for me." But see, if we get Jesus back on center stage, like Paul deliberately did it and the Bible constantly does it, and we say, "You know what? It's not about me and what God's done in me primarily. It's about what God has done on the world stage in history. Let's have a look at Jesus, because in the past, God spoke in various ways, but in these last days, He spoke through His Son, Jesus." And who is Jesus? Heir of all things, the maker of the universe. What do you make of Jesus? We've got to shift from just squabbles and arguments to putting Jesus on stage as we contend with the argument, "I'm not particularly impressed by Christianity anyway." So let's follow the lead of Paul. Let's follow the lead of the Bible. Avoid simply talking about myself and move quickly to talking about who Jesus really appears to be. Next clip.
Religion obeys borders, while truth does not. In America, God is Yahweh, while in India, God is Vishnu.
Well, that's a good question. He says, if God's message to us was so dire, so vitally important, why wouldn't He give it to us in such a clear and precise way so that we would all be in agreement? As evident as a simple math problem in which there is universal agreement. This is one of the big contentions by atheism against belief in God, isn't it? And what it's saying is that we have an empirical way of investigating the cosmos. It's called maths and science. It's rational. And because I cannot prove God's existence using maths and science, God does not exist. Now, in my little caricature on the screen, I've tried to show that perhaps what's happening here by atheists is they overstretch the usefulness of maths and science in determining truth. They elevate mathematical process and scientific process to the defining methodology for determining truth. Do you know, and I got an applaud for this at chapel at school when I actually dared to say there are limitations to maths and science. There was a maths teacher there, and all the kids looked at her and clapped and went, "Ha, I don't need maths." I said, no, I didn't say that, but we clapped anyway. I'll give you some examples from real life. If you have a favorite song, and you just love the song and you can't get it out of your head, and you love that song, and it's a good song, and someone comes up to you and says, "Oh, you really like that song?" You say, "Yeah," and they say, "Can you prove that it's a good song using maths?" You can't. Does it mean it's not a good song? Using the wrong tool. You see a beautiful piece of artwork, and you say, "This is a magnificent piece of artwork." And someone says, "Can you prove that that is a beautiful piece of artwork using science?" And you say, "I can't." Does that mean the artwork's not good? No. It means you're using the wrong tool. The most weighty decision I ever made in my life, apart from becoming a Christian, was asking my lovely wife to marry me. I said the words, "Will you marry me?" Now, how did I decide that I should ask her to marry me? I couldn't use maths and science to make that decision, but it's the best decision I ever made. I used logic and reason. I looked at the history of our relationship. I looked where we were going and where we were headed. But if I'd said, "Now, let me see if I can perfectly determine the likelihood of the outcome of this relationship using science and maths," I would never have asked her to marry me because I couldn't do it. Should I not have asked her to marry me? Heck no. It's fascinating. We take maths and science too far. Let me give you another one. I often say this one to the students at school. Imagine it's your year 12 formal night. Now, it's easy for the girls because they've been imagining it for 13 years since they started kindergarten. The boys imagine it for 13 minutes at 5:47, the night of the formal. But I say, imagine you're at your year 12 formal and you've had your eye on that girl and you walk over and you say, "Look, I haven't had the guts to say this, but I want to say it tonight. You look absolutely stunning. You are beautiful." And she gives you that little smile and you say, "But I couldn't come up with a mathematical or scientific formula to prove that you're beautiful, so I suppose your beauty does not exist. It's not going to go well. I then say to the boys, if she's still talking to you, she's a keeper. But you're using the wrong tool. You've overstretched the use of these empirical methodologies. This is a massive downfall in atheism. Now, I teach science. But why do we somehow say that God must fall under an empirical method of investigating him, and if he won't play by my game, then he doesn't exist? It's foolishness. Lots of important things in our lives exist outside of rationality according to maths and science. I get it all the time. I'll get a Year 9 student who gets 30% on their ecosystem science task. 30%. In other words, that's translated as epic fail, right? Biology. And then I have them for Christian studies later in the week, and they go, sir, I'm an atheist because science has proved there is no God. I say, are you sure that with your level of understanding of science, that you're happy to throw God out of the picture? I'd be a little bit careful if I was you. See, we're often accused, aren't we, of having faith in a dead guy? Yeah, we do. But anyone who wants to run to science to say that they've convincingly decided they're an atheist because God does not exist simply has faith in a whole heap of different models that have very little basis in science. You know where science is going right now? Because it's a problem. We know that 13.6 billion years ago, according to our latest models, that everything just went from nothing. And that's incredibly profoundly unscientific in terms of nothingness becoming somethingness. So you know what we're doing? We're trying to define what nothing is to try and prove that it was in fact something. Okay. And so if you follow the thread with string theory and membrane theory and all these nerdy things that I keep up to date with, one of the scientific models at the moment says, you know what, we've got all these things we can measure in this room right now, atoms and molecules and quarks and protons, neutrons and electrons. We can measure those with science. But there's a chance that at the same time in this room, there are all these unscientifically measurable particles that we can't do yet in a fourth dimension, so that there's a multiverse. And at the moment, there could even be living things in here that are built up of non-scientific phenomena. Okay. Sure. I believe in an unscientifically verifiable God who at this moment is present amongst his people. It's not a shut case. It's frustrating. If you watch The Big Bang, there's a great line in the start of it. They actually get something right. They say, math, science, history, unraveling the mystery. It all started with a big... Woo! Someone watches it. See, maths, science, history. Historically, the question is, if there's a God, is there a chance that we can look anywhere where he has tangibly touched the earth and stepped in and revealed himself to me? The Christian says, you know what? I think there is. We use two faculties, science and history. You see, and the Bible goes there as well. Did you know the Bible in Romans 1, which we read today, says all humanity is without excuse in terms of two things from nature. Verse 19, what can be known about God is plain to them because God has shown it to them. What has he shown? His invisible attributes, namely his eternal power and divine nature, have been clearly perceived ever since the creation of the world. The idea is, the Bible says that all people who ever live on the surface of the earth are without excuse in terms of looking at creation and wondering, is there a God? And if you wonder and you get to a conclusion, well, if there is, I believe he would be eternally powerful, more so than me, and have a nature other than mine. He is divine. That's as far as we can go by looking at creation. That by living in this world, God expects that all people would say, you know what? It seems like maybe there's an eternally divine force. But that's not a Christian. You see, it's Jesus. It's math, science, history. It's the man in history, Jesus Christ, who says, that inkling you have that maybe there's a God, here I am. Look at me. You see, we're told that when Jesus came to earth, he looked at water and he said, H2O, hey? Hydrogen bonding, hey? Most people, when you step on it, you fall through it. You know what I'm going to do? Hydrogen bonding. Get stronger. I'm walking across you. Now, if that actually happened, if Jesus literally walked across water molecules, that's God. A rejection of God is ultimately a rejection of the historical Jesus. That's the point of contention with the God, maths, science question. You see, the question is,
why would Almighty God allow the continuation of such...
It's a big call. The atheist here lays his cards on the table and he says, I am not happy with the way that God chose to reveal himself. God got it wrong. A perfect being would have gotten it right from the very beginning. I look at humanity, says the atheist in the video, and says, God got it wrong. It's a big call, isn't it? I want to affirm the assumption. If there's a perfect being who decided to reveal himself as God on the earth, we would expect that he'd do it the right way, would we not? I would. And so the question here from the atheist, and the thing that's supposed to completely unsettle us as we look at humanity, is apparently that because humanity is fighting with one another about who God is, therefore God does not exist. That's ridiculous. If they're squabbling about something, does that mean the something does not exist, or does it mean that humans are being humans and squabbling about it? I'm not particularly enamored with human behavior, are you? I'm appalled, for the most part. I'm appalled at myself. Doesn't mean God does not exist. It just means that we're a pack of moron sinners who keep getting it wrong. But did God get it wrong because he bothered with us? I think not. If we take it back to Hebrews, we're reminded again exactly who Jesus is, which, by the way, is the definer of our faith. I've got a lot of Christian mates, but I've got to tell you, as much as they're amazing mates, I have unbelievable mates. They hang out with me. They're not God. They're just as broken and squabbly as I am. But we're told constantly in the Bible, the Son is the radiance of God's glory and the exact representation of his being. Jesus Christ is the one who reveals God perfectly. We squabble about the implications of Christ. That's human. Jesus transcends humanity and stands there and says, here is God. Examine me in history. Take a look at what I achieved and make your decision about God from Jesus, not humanity. It's a big claim. Did God get it wrong? No, God didn't get it wrong. God got it perfectly right and breathtakingly so, didn't he? I mean, I've got to say that living and breathing in this world, with the fact that I just take a breath of air and for some reason oxygen is exchanged for carbon dioxide at the surface of the alveoli in my lungs and then it feeds my blood and I get rid of the toxin. And I think, don't even think about it, it happens 15 times every minute. I mean, that is stunning. And then into that kind of understanding comes Jesus and says, and I can master that stuff. Because when my lungs stop working for 3 days, I'll just tell them to start again. See, if Jesus walked out of that tomb, he is God. God gave us the most awesome science experiment, I think, ever for verification of his existence. I sometimes say this to the kids. I say, you know what? Don't try this for your next science investigation, okay? Don't devise an experiment that says, hey, on the first day of the experiment, shoot me, so I'm dead, lock me in a tomb, and 3 days later, if I walk out, right, I'm God. If I don't, I'm human. Don't do that experiment. I'll lose my job for approving it. And you're not coming out because you're not God. But see, God has revealed his power over death and his true nature through the person and work of Jesus Christ in history. That must be the point that we run to as we are unsettled by the accusation that God is dead. And as we are unsettled by our friends and our Australian neighbors who are so quickly turning away from belief in God. It's Jesus Christ who hangs over history that we must continually turn to. He is compelling. The final image is telling, isn't it? This is a great overreach by the atheist. Notice everyone on the left is a squabbling, fighting mess labeled as some religious bigot. And on the right, the atheist walks away. And what's his tag now? I'm human. I've left behind the unevolved simpletons who are simply believers in God because they were taught these things. And I walk off as the first highly evolved human, free of labels, ready to embrace life. Wow. Atheism has a huge struggle, and they usually admit it. Because if the atheist worldview is correct, there is no God, and we're just here by random chance, we came from no one, we're going nowhere, we're a sack of atoms worth about $2.50, that we live randomly for 80 years, and then our sack of atoms is returned to the recycled cosmos to be used by other organisms. And everything we do is inconsequential, and it's just random fluke. And that it came about by a process known as biological Darwinian evolution, survival of the fittest. Whoever is the best at surviving survives, and everyone else is crushed in their wake. If that's the way that we put biological life together, how ought we to put social life together, ethics and how we treat other human beings? It's a big question for atheism, because the logical conclusion is whoever is the most fit gets to win. Now, if you want to look at the outworking of things like social Darwinism, you don't have to go much past what Nazi Germany did to the Jews to exterminate an inferior race. It's a difficult one. How do we socially behave if we're simply bags of atoms that are here by chance and there's no consequence? But you see, the Christian worldview is compelling. You go Genesis 1:2, and it says, God created humanity in his image. In the image of God, he created them, male and female, he created them, to have dominion over all other creation. He pulls humanity out and he says, you are image bearers of God, equal dignity and worth. Behave like that. That's a Christian worldview. It's breathtaking. You know, that was the biblical text that William Wilberforce used to overthrow slavery in the 1800s. He said, hang on, biblically, humanity has been given by God the privilege of being his image bearer and to have dominion over other creation, not over one another. So to own another human being is abhorrent. And he spent his dying days abolishing the slave trade, because all humanity is equal worthy of equal respect as image bearers of their creating God. That's beautiful. You get rid of God, you get rid of human, and you're simply a bag of atoms that's a little bit smarter than all the other bag of atoms. Doesn't stand. Atheism dehumanizes humanity. It doesn't elevate it. The opening of the cartoon had the atheist saying, God has not revealed himself to me. God has revealed himself. Jesus Christ, the man of history. New atheism is not a new way of rejecting belief in God. It's the old, old story of rejecting Jesus. God has revealed himself, hasn't he, friends? Spectacularly through the historical man, the Lord Jesus Christ. Hang on him when you're rattled by our culture that turns away. Let's pray.